Welcome, everyone, to the Justin and Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who's out there, you can find us on Instagram at Justin Bizarro. Again, B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. And you can also find us on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. So I have a very special guest. This relationship's really blossom. I'm interested to see how all of our parties come together and create some magic in the world. And we've already heard from Stuart. He was on the Justin the Food Entrepreneurs podcast. He will also be on the show here eventually on the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. Stuart is this gentleman's partner, and this gentleman is Aaron Pennington of Explore from Nashville, Tennessee. How are you doing today, Aaron?
I'm doing great, Justin. Thanks for having me on.
You're very welcome. So, Aaron, tell me your history. Tell me where you grew up. Did you grow up in an entrepreneurial family, and sort of how you ended up meeting Stuart, of all people, and forming these awesome businesses that you guys have?
So I did grow up in an entrepreneur family on one side of the family. I'm from a small town in Kentucky, just 2 hours north of Nashville. And just south of Louisville, so it was interesting being in a smaller town. You don't really see entrepreneurship in a small town like you do a big city, or like you do when you're older. You're out of college, you're seeing what else everybody is doing. I worked in high school for just a couple of small, like, sporting goods stores, independently owned, and so I got to see a little bit of what a small business was like. Both my parents were teachers, so in the kind of immediate family, nobody was necessarily an entrepreneur in the immediate family. And on one side of the family, most everybody's teachers. And so when I was going through school, I said one thing I'm never going to do is go into teaching, which is, it's funny. I mean, you say that stuff and then you realize, okay, never say never. Because God's going to put you in a place where he's going to say, I told you so. And so I ended up actually teaching before Stuart and I started Explore, teaching video production at a college here in Nashville for a few years. And loved it. And so that was very fun for me. But I know where I got that genetic from. And then I have my dad's side of the family is kind of entrepreneur land for our family. His brother, my dad's brother, so my uncle, started and sold a couple businesses related to the physical therapy industry nationwide. My other uncle, so my dad's sister's brother, started a software company. And then my dad's niece's husband, he started kind of a teacher supply company. And so that side of the family is just incredibly independent. And my dad's incredibly independent, and I got a lot of that from him. But I never even really considered entrepreneurship at all when growing up. I was always just enthralled with video production, telling stories, doing all of those things, and creating before social media, creating before YouTube. I have a lot of philosophy, and I think that's a very important part of the video production industry is the audience that you're creating for. So I think a lot of people have advantages of who created before social media. But I never really thought entrepreneurship was something for me. It's starting my own like agency or business or anything like that. I just knew what I wanted to do, tell stories, kind of whatever under any umbrella that could do that. But I out of college, I just started working for myself, freelancing, getting a hold of what this industry was like. I was down to Nashville, and that's when I kind of stumbled upon what this industry was, and what I liked, what I didn't like. That's what I was getting a feel for. I ended up jumping into a lot of live production. Funny enough, but Nashville is huge for live events. They are everywhere. So I learned a lot about every part of the live event industry, especially on the production side. So the video side for sure. I've directed many, many, many different types of events, all the way to stuff with ESPN when they're doing their college sports stuff around Nashville, which is pretty often. We have a lot of colleges here in Nashville, conferences, concerts, everything that you can think of, and learning how to set up those, not only on the video side, the lighting side, the audio side, and doing that full time for a little bit. During that, it's one of those things where I still didn't find exactly what I was looking to do with video production, because you're not necessarily, in a way, you're telling stories with live events, but you're kind of telling somebody else's story in a sense. You're not being able to kind of release that creativity of creating. You're really just kind of telling somebody else's story, and those stories are very predictable because it's a conference or it's a concert or it's a sporting event, and so those stories are already kind of baked in. So I really had a knack for doing something a little bit more. And then I jumped into teaching just for a little bit after that, transitioning from doing kind of full-time audio video production to teaching, which was absolutely incredible. I learned one thing. If you really want to say that you know how to be an expert in something, teaching is the best way to make sure that you do that, because you have to tell people who have never heard a single thing about these topics and explain it to them, like an explain like I'm five kind of thread. You have to really break it down in its simplest form and understand it in such a way to where you can explain it in just a couple minutes to somebody who has never heard of these concepts before. And so that was great. I love doing that. I love dissecting things down to their core, understanding how they affect people, understanding how it has an impact, and then being able to communicate that out. So it really kind of fit in the line of work that I wanted to be in. About at this time, somewhere in the middle of teaching, Stuart, my business partner, we met through Instagram. This is when Instagram was in its height of just posting great photos and interacting with people. I missed those days a lot. And I got into photography with the advancements of DSLRs, being able to do both video and photo. And at the time, Stuart and I met through Instagram, just doing photo walks. Everybody kind of hosted photo walks around the city where photographers just got together with no intention other than hanging out and just shooting the great architecture and scenery of Nashville. And we would just hang out, learn from each other. There's so many talented photographers here in Nashville. It is wild. So there's always techniques to learn, and people were just willing to say, you know, hey, this is what I've been doing and I've seen a lot of success with it. Let me show you how to do it as well. But Stuart and I got together. I think Stuart must have seen something in me, and I haven't even asked him about this. Like, well, why did you tell this stuff to me? I don't even know. But he must have seen something with me with the video side of things. And, you know, I had a yearn to kind of get level up in creating stories and everything. And he told me about a vision he had for creating video content about Nashville and helping people really explore the local area beyond Broadway, beyond the horizons of what people thought about Nashville when they flew in or when they drove in. And at the time, I had been really diving into content marketing. And it's kind of a buzzword now, but it wasn't well known back then, 2016-ish. But I had been really focusing for really no reason at all on the subject of content marketing. It's something that just kind of stuck with me as far as what I was interested in. It fell into the video side of things. It's one of those things that I was very attracted to. I had always really enjoyed studying brands and how brands were created and the story that brands were telling. And so during time for a few years, I was just really diving into a lot of books, Content Marketing Inc., the company. I'd really dove into a lot of stuff that they were teaching as well. And I didn't really know why. I wasn't using any of it, but I was trying to understand it and trying to see, you know, okay, if this brand was practicing this, how would they do it? So I was you know, for no reason, just run the scenario of how this brand could utilize content marketing. And it's essentially telling their story. It's not selling, it's telling their story. So it fit right in. All of these things really just kind of fit right into what I feel like I'm meant to do, is tell stories. And so when Stuart was like, you know, I want to do this thing, it fit right into where I wanted to be, and that's telling stories. And now I had a pretty good concept of what that could be. We didn't sit down and say, I want to start a business plan. We just said, we want to tell these stories. We didn't say, we need to get sponsorships. We didn't say we need to, form an LLC right away. It was just, let's try this. Because I knew with content marketing, it is not a 3 month thing. It's not a 6 month thing. These are a couple of years of things. And so we started posting YouTube videos about 6 months later, after we really kind of dove into what it could look like. I believe May of 2018. So this would have been almost 5 years ago exactly. We started posting videos on our YouTube channel, explore.nash. And we really saw and were really captured by what we were doing, even if it wasn't technically perfect, even if we weren't using lav mics and just like shotgun mics on the camera at the time, even if we didn't have the best gear, because we were financing this out of our own pockets or whatever we had on us. And so we were doing that, and it was being well received. We started an Instagram account at the time, and really just focused on what content marketing is, and that's giving value. And that led to everything that we are doing now. We started our LLC about a year later because, you know, we were getting so many requests to, you know, then do video production for other people. From they saw, hey, they do great work here. They could probably help do our work as well. And the best part is, it was the companies that we enjoy, that we also recommend, and a lot of companies that have the same vision of us. They have products or services or what have you that help people in the city of Nashville, something that we're passionate about as well. So those were kind of the beginning of Explore and everything we have now. And that's really kind of how I have arrived in the current moment that we're in.
So where did this come from, this passion for film? I mean, is it something that grew inside you? Is it something that was instilled at birth? I mean, we touched upon it a little bit, but I mean, to go teach it, I mean, to be like, I'm going to teach something. I mean, that doesn't, it's not very inspiring, I guess. I know what you're saying though, about needing to teach to become an expert. I agree with that 100%. And I agree with it also that people can catch it. So it's not forced upon them. It's not demand upon them, but be able to teach people in a way that they catch it, meaning they voluntarily catch it. They have to have, there's some motion in it. They can't just catch the ball if it's thrown at them, if they don't move their arm to try to catch it, or arms, depending on the ball. And so I agree with that, but let's go back to what I was saying. Like, when was this instilled in you? Like, really? And like, how, you know, what motivates you? What inspires you to keep going amongst all this? Because I think a lot of people are like, camera work, blah, blah, blah. Why would someone do that? I get why you would do it, but let's talk about what inspires you and what motivates you. How long has it been going on?
So the inspiration for it may have been born a long time ago. I mean, I think everybody our age, or you're a little bit older than me, but we were still at the time where, you know, you may have had a home camera, you know, whether it was the tape or, you know, now everybody has their phone. So, but the time before that, everybody had at least some kind of maybe home camera, whether it was tape or mini DV or all of these other things, VHS, to maybe film what was going on Christmas mornings, whether it was family events or ball games or something like that. That was something that we had. We just had, you know, one of the some kind of tape camera. And I have a photo of me. I don't remember this. I was so young. I was probably three. of me look in pretty good form too. I was very surprised with myself, like looking down the eyepiece of this camera, hand on the tripod, and looking through the lens like I was shooting like a sporting event or something. And of course, I don't remember it, and I don't remember that really sparking anything. But at least there was some kind of curiosity with it at a young age. In middle school, high school, both my brother and I, my brother is in the video industry as well. We would use video to present projects, those things. It wasn't out of a, like, this is my passion, so I'm going to do this. It was more of a, this is just fun, and this is how I want to tell the story of the presentation instead of putting it on poster board. I want to use video, and this was back when it was still tape. And so, you know, instead of getting in a nonlinear video editing system like Adobe or Avid or Final Cut, it was you hit the record button, and you stop the record button, stop recording, and that's where the scene ended. If you needed to redo it, you rewound the tape, and then you started, and it just recorded over that tape, and that's when you redid your scene. And so that was very interesting. And then, you know, the passion for it really came more so in high school. Our high school barely had any extracurriculars at all. We were a small high school graduating class of, you know, I guess a mid-sized high school, over 100 for a graduating class. But we barely had any extracurriculars for our classes. But we did have broadcasting, and we could take that for 2 years. And so I did. I thought it was something that I was, you know, decently talented at, and so I thought it would be very easy. And we had an excellent teacher as well, somebody who was retired from the news world up in Louisville, came down and back to Elizabethtown and taught. And really, she instilled so many fundamentals in us at an early age that, or at the early stages of the classes. And so we just sat there and learned the fundamentals. And then we had a couple days just to take the cameras and go crazy. We could go off of the campus. We could roam throughout the halls and go and film and try to execute these things. And so that really instilled fundamentals in our brains of how to tell these stories. Now that we were all kind of interested in this, and funny enough, a lot of people who were in that same graduating class and took those same classes are still in the video industry today. She had a tremendous impact, on the video industry in that town and probably throughout the state because of it. And so that's where really that kind of interest took a little bit of, oh, this is something that's doable. This is something that's fun. You get to tell stories. You get to meet people. You get to be independent because you're the one behind the camera telling the story. And I do like the aspect of video itself. I realized probably in college that video is unique in its ability to tell a story compared to book or music. There's always some piece that, you know, with a book, you have to, the reader has to picture what's going on visually. Same with music. There's a visual component that's missing that you kind of have to pick up or interpret yourself as the listener. And with pictures, there's room left to interpret. With paintings, there's room left to interpret. With video, most of the aspect of interpretation is already done for you. So the video is done for you. The sound's done for you. The lighting's done for you. Everything is really done for you. And so the picture is what it is, and there's not a whole lot of interpretation. Script, maybe there's room for interpretation, but that's kind of the least of it. And so I realized that you can tell the story exactly the way that you want to, and there's really little room left for interpretation because you're doing everything there. And so you can do a pretty accurate job on telling a story, whether it's fiction, nonfiction, music videos are kind of the exception to music because you're adding that visual component to it. And so I, for some reason, I really grasped onto that. And we did so many different types of video production during that. We did news reporting. We did narratives. We did music videos. We did, we even dabbled in the basic versions of After Effects then. So I really got to dip my hand in so many things. We had 2 full years of this in high school. And so that's what I decided I wanted to major in. And, really the funny thing is I was taught so much in high school that college, the first 3 years was basically repeating what I had already learned in high school, because, you know, when you're going to college, they assume you're still going in knowing nothing. And so the education that I had in high school for that was just absolutely incredible. But kind of going back a little bit more to your question, you know, what keeps me going with this? Because anybody can kind of have that spark of, oh, this is cool, but how long will that spark actually last? And that is an interesting question. But like I said earlier, my family is, especially on my dad's side, just very independent. And essentially what it comes down to, and a lot of entrepreneurs I feel are like this, if you're doing what you like, and it sounds cliche, but it's very, very true. If you are doing the thing that you really enjoy, you have that amount of independence. There's nothing else like that. It's just very captivating to be kind of under your own guise. And the thing that I realized from doing this with video production is it's like, okay, well, maybe I'll stop and go to the next thing when I get tired of it. But I've never gotten tired of it. And so that's one of those things where I know that it is still a passion that I will never be tired of doing, never be tired of telling people's story through digital media, never be tired of editing or shooting or doing those things, because it comes so naturally to me. And it's one of those things where if I choose to put 12 hours into it today, that's not going to feel like 12 hours to me, because it's something that I chose to do. It's something that I put under kind of my own care. And so you just treat things differently when it's that way. But that's how I've always approached it, is I'll continue to do the things that make me happy. And it's very, it's one of those things that's very, just important to me. Because once you find that little bit of independence of doing something on your own, it is, I don't even know if life-changing is really the word, but you really don't want to go to anything else when you're doing entrepreneurship and kind of being in control of your own destiny. It's a really good feeling to have that independence.
I love this. So let me ask a question then, and I'm going to tail off of this question, but I'm going to come back to it because I want to ask this. Like, when you met Stuart and you guys like talked about doing this idea and creating Explore, like talk to me about, because you come from an entrepreneurial background, and being a camera in front of a camera or behind a camera, I think is entrepreneurial in and of itself and trying to build that business. But talk to me about how you guys knew you would work so well together. Talk to me about, you know, the relationship there and why Stuart happened to be the person that you wanted to invest in. And you have 2 LLCs together, we talked about, or 2 businesses. So like, how did that come about? How did you know that he fit the mold of what you wanted in a business partner?
Yeah, that's a great question, because throughout the years of Stuart and I having a business, we're 4 years in of having an LLC, we've heard story after story of people who are like, yeah, I had a business partner. It just, you know, a couple of years later, just didn't end up working out. So now I'm on my own. So we've heard tons of stories about business partnerships, you know, just not panning out. But we've also seen a lot of success stories as well. One of the things that I think that we made a connection on the business side was our passion to create, because Stuart is also coming from that creative side. He does incredible photography. He's done video before in the travel space and creating those types of videos. But we very much have that creative mindset that we were able to relate with each other, and we knew when creating it's the story first. Story basically trumps everything in creating, and you don't find that many people out there with that. So that was the first thing that mattered. The second thing was we wanted to think 10 years out, 20 years out, and we both really recognized that there's not going to be a whole lot of compromise on that. We want to think long-term with our business, with our content. And so all of these things that you really have to align with in a business relationship on how you think, when problems arise, how do you deal with it? We both lined up with that as well. I'm the kind of person that if there is any kind of problem, like if we have a disagreement, if you don't address those disagreements, I mean, it's just like any relationship. If you don't address those disagreements and know how to talk about them in a mature way, air everything out, and at the end of the day, say, even to your business partner, I love you and I forgive you. And we both need that because we both have our times where we're hot-headed. We feel like our decision is the best decision. And we just need to air out frustrations on how to work things out. But if both sides are not going to be of a forgiveful mindset and we are both, men of faith, we both rely, and we're both Christians and we both really understand that we have been forgiven. And so therefore we are tasked with forgiving and loving like Jesus loved the church and Jesus loved, of God's people. And so we come from that mindset really first and foremost on that side of things. And so we know at the end of the day, there's something more important than this business. And that really helps to put things in perspective of, you know, how to have a business relationship is to talk things through, have incredible understanding, be a good listener. And if one of us gets hot-headed, we forgive the others because we know it comes from a place of passion to grow this business, grow this community. And then as we go through, we recognize there's so many things to do. We then have to start splitting these responsibilities. Stuart talked about this with me. I don't know if he said it on your show, but he has a passion to employ people. And it's also recognizing where you don't have passions and where you feel because you don't have to do everything. That's kind of a mistake that I feel like and Stuart have even made is you feel like we need to do everything. And then as you get deeper into your business and you get busier, you realize that's an impossible dream. We can't do everything. And so when we split tasks, we realize what we are truly called to and put those responsibilities there and then trust the other person with those decisions. And that's something that we just kind of fell into because we knew it needed to be done. And so far it's worked out. We trust the other person with those responsibilities. We trust the money making decisions or the money spending decisions, the creative decisions, all of those things, is built on a trust and a track record. And so, that's really at the heart of how we're, you know, still great business partners through these ventures. And a lot of it is commonality. A lot of it is the commonality of faith, and then also the pursuit of similar goals and dreams within our own personal lives as well.
Talk to me about like role models or people you looked up to growing up. Like you mentioned a teacher, but were there other people or sports figures or, you know, or people in your town, in your community? Because I feel like you've had good role models.
That's a great question because sometimes you don't know that people are really role models until you realize where you've picked up certain habits or certain things that you do. And so yeah, definitely a sports kid growing up, and I grew up in the era of Michael Jordan, and so. That was the big sports idol growing up. I was a huge baseball person. So my family and I, we'd go to Cincinnati Reds games every summer. We're Reds fans. But as far as sports figures influencing what I do now, it wasn't necessarily the case. Probably when I was in high school, you know, they were somebody that I looked up to as far as understanding how to understand to put it in the work, which is very important for entrepreneurship. I think there's a healthy level of understanding, you know, how to start your own business by doing some kind of team sports, competitive sports, because you then know a few things. You learn that, you know, somebody is there out there who is, you know, coming for you. And so you really have to, you learn how to outcompete. You learn what it takes to outcompete, and you know it's not going to be by sitting on the couch. You know it's by going to do things that are going to outcompete that other person. So competitive sports was big there, and you know, seeing what could be achieved with that, pro athletes really kind of idolized that in a little bit of a sense. And I guess probably my dad, even though I didn't really look at him as a role model, I just kind of naturally modeled his independence, because even though he's a retired school teacher, he went to college and got 4 degrees. Just because he was passionate about learning. He's one of those guys that was, he was in the military. He went to school, then he was in the military, and then he went to college again after that, just because he enjoyed the learning process. He probably should have been a college professor, but, you know, we just hung out in our little small town. He taught middle school and then retired, but he was passionate about so many things. He would read so many books every week. I got the independence from him a lot, because he kind of did what he wanted to do, not in a bad way. But I really learned that is a very, very crucial part of living my life. Excuse me. Was finding the thing that I really like to do and then continue to do it. And then I did look up to, the rest of the family on my dad's side, those who are entrepreneurs, those who have created these successful businesses. And they would, you know, they would talk about it a little bit at family gatherings. I understood a little bit of what they did. I almost wish I recognized a little bit earlier, what they did, so I could just kind of, you know, talk to them a lot through high school and college about what they did. It would have influenced probably a lot more of how I operate a business now. But I think it was a lot of my father and seeing him being very happy in doing what he wanted to do, which was learn. And that was his passion. He's a very big ideas guy. And so I think that's where I got that as well, is being able to come up with ideas. There are so many people who ask Stuart and I all the time, like, where do you think up of so many content ideas for these channels and all of this stuff? And that is the easy part for us. There is no shortage of how to create content, the ideas for brands, for businesses. And that's where I got a little bit of that. I was probably also influenced a little bit as well by my mom. She was a high school teacher, and she would teach a lot of marketing things. Now, I never took a single class from it. But, you know, just me being a bored kid would look through the textbook. I felt like I had a good sense for what it was talking about. And so I think I didn't necessarily recognize from any age that I had any kind of idols that I looked up to necessarily. There is one person, as I really, really started to get into the video side of things after. I right as I was going into teaching, and after I was kind of doing full time audio and video production for the live TV world, and it was the YouTuber Casey Neistat. And I don't know, being up in New York, Justin, did you ever get the chance to meet Casey?
No, I have not met her.
But Casey Neistat, he is or him. Video Sorry. Creator and he's in Manhattan. He went to LA, now he's back in Manhattan. but the way that he, I resonated heavily with the way that he created, but he started out at a young age before creating for social media. And I very much understood his storytelling perspective, and it resonated a lot with me because that's, I had a fundamental understanding of what he was talking about, but he really created a incredible motivation for people to go out and create, for whatever purpose it may be, but really gave some energy to the movement of really the independent, independent filmmaker or independent video creator, things like that. And so that was a huge spark for me, not because I learned a lot from him, but because he was a great motivation factor in, hey, look at this person just really doing it for fun. Now, he had a business model to it as well. But he, I resonated with the fun that he had in creating videos every day. And so I don't know if you would call that an idol, really, but I really looked up to the way that he created. It resonated highly with me, and it gave me a really good boost to really go out there and create. And that was still around. That was around the same time that Stuart and I were starting Explore as well.
I like this a lot. I just, you know, and I just looked up Casey. Sorry, I said her, but it is a him. Neistat. He is quite the YouTuber, particularly in New York City. I am familiar with some of the things he's done. I was not familiar with him, particularly the subway YouTube. I think I've seen that where he makes fun of pulling the subway cord. And And so, like, I think that was probably his big break. And I was living in New York around that time that I remember the video coming out. And, you know, it's interesting because YouTube's been around for a long time. And it's just, it's, you know, I thought at some point maybe it wasn't going to stay around. But Jesus, it's, you know, it's a new media. I mean, it's a new outlet, and there's how many YouTubers and YouTube channels and travel YouTube channels out there. It's kind of an incredible platform. And I do like that that it's competitive, so the best products come to the top. And what you and Stuart are doing is such a good product. I can't wait to see what you guys are able to do as you spend more time on it and really start to hone in on your skills just by the 10,000 hour rule. Or whatever rule it would be.
Yep.
So, yep. Aaron, like, where do you want this to go? Where do you and Stuart want it to go? Where do you want it to go for yourself?
I think that one of the things that Stuart and I really, really strive for, and the point of us creating, is because, and this came a lot from Stuart, and this resonates with me on a little bit of a different level. Stuart wants to give people the best possible experience that they can have where they are at their exact moment. And that's where our passion comes from to create Explore Nash, Explore Tennessee, Explore Tours, all the things that we're doing. We're passionate about helping people experience the present like, in essentially the best way that they can possibly do it. And so video is one of the best ways to kind of mass produce that list or those experiences that we're hoping to send to people and for people to watch. And I think Stuart may have said this on his podcast on the food side, and you may say it on the other podcast when he's on. But we've had probably close to 200 people, 250 people since we started that have made life changing decisions to move to Nashville because they saw our videos and they said, you know, I want to be in that space. Which is just, and some of them have become really, really good friends of ours. And that's just something that is incredible to experience as somebody who creates. That's one of the biggest compliments that you can get as a creator. Somebody's made a life-changing decision. And I got into video so that I could create stories that are going to have, not like a social impact, not like a millennial, like I just want to have an impact. Not that kind of thing, but like I want the stories that I tell to move people. I don't want somebody to watch and just go, hey, that was cool. I want people to think. I want people to do something. I want people to not forget it. And so when we come at those two angles to creating this content, then we've really got something that we think can impact people's lives and experiencing their presence at the best stage that they can. And especially, you know, we specialize in their experience with their community, whether it's a place to eat, a place to go visit with their family, a vacation place, or, you know, even just how to spend a free few hours. And so, you know, we want to do that on a mass scale. You know, there is not a limit to how big we want to do that. It could be, you know, we want to do it statewide. We want to do it countrywide. We want to do it worldwide, because that really, that mission, can go throughout the world. And if we're continuing to bring people that experience of living, really incredible lives, and experiencing the best things that they can when they're going somewhere or even in their own community. We've had so many people in Nashville who are natives, and they said, I've lived in Nashville my entire life. This was just down the road for me. I had no idea this was here, and it's incredible. And, you know, those are the experiences that Stuart and I really live for, and we know that we're giving something of value. And I think that's important to us as well. So, you know, when you ask, you know, how big can this thing go? Our list long of things that we want to do is very long, and we have them all written down. But we also have a list, since we've gotten that little taste of entrepreneurship, we have a very long list of businesses that are completely unrelated to this, that have a little bit of the same spirit, but completely unrelated to what Explore is, that we really hope to start one day, whether it's because we have other passions that we want to pursue in the business world, or whether they're just, we think this will bring great value to people in a little bit of a different sense, or it's just a good business opportunity. But, you know, our minds are constantly thinking about those things, knowing, hey, this is going to be something that we do one day. We don't know when the timing of it is going to be, but we're going to be doing these things one day. So we don't plan on stopping anytime soon in doing what we're doing, and we hope to expand what we're doing as well.
Where can they find you online, and YouTube, Instagram, all that good stuff?
So our main channels, explore.nash, you can find us on YouTube, and that is xplr.nash, and on Instagram, xplr.nash, and then our latest venture is Explore Tours. It's xplr tours on Instagram, and we're on all the social media channels with this. Explore Tennessee as well, that was something that was started earlier this year, and so that's helping to serve the community of Tennessee, find amazing things to do. That's one of our younger channels, and so that's where you can find us on that. We also have a podcast called Nashville Daily Podcast, where it's a Monday through Friday show, usually around half an hour, where we talk about what is going on in the local food scene, maybe the local politics scene. The people are running for mayor now, so we got to talk about that. And in the development community, you know, what buildings are going up, what's opening, what's closing, what businesses are coming into town, and, you know, the things that you want to talk about with your friends. And it's not so newsy. It's very conversational. So Nashville Daily Podcast on YouTube and all other social media channels.
I love this. How do you guys find all these interesting facts that no one knows in Nashville? I agree with that. And as someone that was there for a while and trying to find stuff to do every once in a while, I find it interesting there's not more stuff about it. There's a lot of food bloggers for sure and foodies who post on Instagram and YouTube, but there's not any history. I feel like there are a dime a dozen now. No one actually talks about the history or the things that you guys talk about. How did you go about, you know, differentiating yourself, number one? And number two, How do you find that type of content?
That is mostly where Stuart's influence comes in very heavily. I feel like I know more about Tennessee. I do know more about Tennessee and Nashville than I know about my hometown or my home state of Kentucky. And that's where Stuart's passion for history really came in and really shone through everything that we have done. And that's, Stuart has an incredible passion for history, for telling those stories. And what's really cool, once I got the bug for it, we have an entire bookshelf in our studio that you can pick up a book and read for days all about the history of Nashville and Tennessee and the areas. And it's one of those things that, you're right, it is a big differentiator in our business model than most people, because, you know, you may see our Instagram, you're like, okay, it's an Instagram that shows people things to do, places to eat, all of that stuff. But if you really don't understand the things that made Nashville, Nashville, then you're really going to wind up misunderstanding what's going on as a whole. And I think that people can increase their experience of a city, increase their experience of other venues when they know the history of it. That's when I go to explore a new city. I usually just, I take all the history tours I can. I'll walk around the downtown city for a few days, and I'll just really get a feel for it. But you know, if I don't understand the history, I don't know really whose footsteps I'm walking in these cities. And it magnifies the story and the experience tenfold, a hundredfold, when you know, okay, this person actually probably walked down these steps. This little war happened right here. This battle happened here. And, you know, this big, you know, ring of crime in the 1700s was going on in this district. And it really expands your understanding. And the cool thing about Nashville is in its place, because it's still so young in its development, that there are just about every part of the Nashville you can derive from its founding, whether it's downtown. You can see the correlation of what happened in the 1700s, 1800s, and see, oh, that's why that area looks like it is, because of what happened earlier. And just about every part of Nashville is still young enough in its developmental history that those traces are still there and visible in the downtown area, in the surrounding neighborhoods. We did a neighborhood series with our podcast where we've highlighted, I think so far, 5 or 6 different neighborhoods kind of surrounding the downtown area. So we're trying to make a little spiral around by the time we get done with all of our neighborhood series. And every single neighborhood so far in our series has derived from a land grant that was given from the Revolutionary War, North Carolina generals and all of those things, and they made their way and they found the area of Nashville. And it wasn't really occupied by anybody. It was a territory where people would come in and hunt and then leave. But you can see the influence directly of those generals and everything that they did in the neighborhood still to this day. And so digging into all of these history things is just, expands your experience of that coffee shop, of this market district, of your capital, your state capital tour, of your walk down Broadway. It's one of those things that's very integral into our business model of teaching Nashville, because everything that is currently there has been impacted by these events over the past 300, 400, 500 years.
It's so cool. And one of the things that I find really interesting is that Nashville is so unique, and I can see why no one originally went there, but I can also see why people ended up there, and I can obviously see why it's booming now. It's probably the fastest growing city in America, I'm willing to bet. And it's just crazy that, you know, that the opportunities there, one, you guys met, number two, and the city needs individuals like you, or any city does, that actually tells the history. It's not just food. Let's talk about history. It's not just, here's the theater. Let's talk about places to go. Because I would have never guessed, I watch you guys' stuff all the time, I would have never guessed there's so much to do in Nashville. I mean, think everyone sees Broadway and the singers and the honky-tonks and like, oh, that's what it is. But the neighborhoods, the food, the diversity, the history, the town itself, I mean, just it's so awkwardly built. It's just amazing. And I think that that's part of what you guys are capturing. You're taking all of that and making it your advantage. You're taking the weirdness, the awkwardness, almost because it's that way, people don't think there's any history there or anything important, and you're sort of flipping the script on them. You know, you're kind of blowing minds, being like, wait, what? What goes on in Nashville? And so I think it's a lot like that. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's directly to speak to the awkwardness of the build. And this is the funniest thing ever, and you're exactly right. It is a terribly designed city, and for some reason, and this is why it is, somebody thought hundreds of years ago that they were going to build the pike that expand out of downtown. What they did was they followed the buffalo trails that led from downtown out into the surrounding areas, and they said, you know what, those would make amazing pikes. We're going to trust the buffalo, and we're going to use those as the pipe. Forget the grid. We are going to design these incredibly windy, not connecting pikes and follow the buffalo trails and never change. So those existing pikes that are here in Nashville, Lebanon Pike, Murphy Pearl Pike, Nolensville Pike, all of those things were created from existing buffalo trails hundreds of years ago.
Well, that's incredible. Also, the buffalo being in Nashville. But I agree with you. It's like this weird, almost hub and spoke system that doesn't connect. Like, you literally have to drive through, like, the most country of country roads, or you have to, like, literally horseshoe your way around from cities sometimes.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Go ahead. And
my brother's in Indianapolis, and I look at their interstate system from a map, and I'm like, this is the perfect hub and spoke system I have ever seen. And then it looks like, you know, a 3-year-old with a crayon you told to design a hub and spoke system, and that's what we have here in Nashville.
Well, and that's exactly why it's almost like Nashville is Manhattan or New York City. Like, you can't go anywhere. The way the city was built and designed, however, it's created almost that need to go up because of the tourism, because of the amount of people there. There's no room to expand. So they're going up. They've taken over the train yards and the gulch. And they're building up. And they're building up. And they're building up. They're building up. No different than Donald Trump did to make a lot of his wealth. He bought the old train yards in New York City and then went up. And so... But it's weird also because as you go out those pikes, if you get far enough out, it almost turns into like Los Angeles, where it's like really far to drive. There's a lot of traffic and there's a lot of diversity all the way from like Hollywood Hills and, you know, your upscale Los Angeles mansions to all the way down to, you know, the common person and then into your poorer, you know, economic conditions. And so,
yeah,
it's a very interesting way of looking at it. It's almost like Los Angeles met New York City, and but those two places were planned out very, very, you know, they have grids, they have relative rhyme or reason, even in the boroughs, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, it makes sense a little bit. And so to find that Nashville doesn't, I think it's perfect for this history. I think a lot of entrepreneurs go to Nashville. It's, you know, one of the reasons I went there. It's one of the reasons I am spending a lot of time there, that boom in food that we're talking about, that boom in entrepreneurism, because it's almost like if you were a boxer and you needed to go find yourself again, you would go to Nashville in this case, as to tie the cord between a boxer and an entrepreneur. Like, every once in a while, you just need to rediscover yourself. And like, Nashville's full of them. I mean, between people trying to become singers or songwriters or trying to hustle their way through the world. And I think everyone's like, oh, that's Broadway. Well, Broadway's more like corporate America, okay, of singers. No offense to anyone, but that's what it is. And there's the entrepreneurs who like maybe touch upon that as their career to earn money, but it's just a touching point. It's not a it's not going to get you to the entrepreneurial path, which I found true. I'm not a singer, but when I was down there and hang around with a lot of the entrepreneurs that sort of that get attracted, laws of attraction, you know, and for the audience, it's non-sexual. And the laws of attraction sort of bring us all together. But down there, it's insane how many entrepreneurs there are and such a clusters and so many different fields, like between, you know, whether it's stages or whether it's music or whether it's instruments or whether it's YouTube or whether it's social media, whether it's marketing, whether it's advertising, whether it's, you know, representation, whether it's the studios that record the music or those shows like Disney Radio, Country Disney Radio or Kids Disney Radio or whatever. There's a bunch there. And so I think that that's sort of Nashville in a nutshell, even though it doesn't really fit. It's hard to classify it as a city, even in America, because it's so different. I don't even know how to, even the individuals that are make up Nashville are so different than a lot of people around the world, you know? So I think such an interesting place. And the food scene, which is part of the reason, you know, I'm down there and why I'm do so many podcasts down there, it is really like show business met food entrepreneur business. It's like how they do one thing is how they do everything. It's showtime all the time. That's something Giuliani came up with in New York City when they were trying to clean up the subways, because during that time, New York City was really bad. Times Square was like full of people shooting up and like lots of prostitution and lots of strip clubs. Okay. Wow. And lots of sex shops. And then the subways were all full of spray paint. They weren't safe to be on. People got robbed all the time. People were jumping the turn cells, whatever those things are. I don't know. I'm from the country, but I live there, and I don't know, turnstiles. And there it is. I pulled it out of my hat. And but, you know, it's like showtime, meaning like, okay, if there's an issue, this is how I clean it up every time. And if someone spray paints the subway car, I clean it up every time. If someone jumps the turnstile, I make sure there's an officer there. They get written up every time, you know. And it's sort of what he called showtime, but it's also called a broken window theory. Like if you have a broken window, fix it right away. And I think that because of the showbiz atmosphere in Nashville, there is sort of that environment where no matter what's going on, food, the entrepreneurial spirit is, well, provide a solution right away. And that's so true in business, in the music business in particular, in that you're always trying to cater to your audience and you're always trying to pivot and adjust and get emotional responses out of them, whatever those are, you know. And I think that that's, you know, not always their intent, but that is the ultimate intent, right? With music, you're making someone feel something, you're writing words to gain a feeling. So I would say that it's show business all the time. So I like what you guys are doing. You have a niche, you're doing it differently. The history part is amazing. I love history. I always said if it paid more, I would have been a historian. But the modern age allows you to do different things with YouTube and stuff, and you can make a living doing pretty much anything you have a passion about, just so the audience knows, since this is an entrepreneur show. Anything that you have a passion about, you can probably make money doing it if it provides a solution. You know, and in this case, you guys are providing a solution, which is, okay, it's not food all the time. It's not your stereotypical things in Nashville or Tennessee. You guys really do your homework and research to find some of these cool places and come up with ideas and places to film and all of that stuff. Like, that takes a lot of work. People don't realize that. Like, even when I do photo shoots and I try to do my social media stuff and stuff for the podcast, like, I'm like, what the heck? I don't even know what's going on, you know? So I'm just like, I have to try to find new places, and you don't want to have the same place twice. And I'm just like, how do I find new places here? But I think so. What you guys doing is extremely creative. Aaron, as we wrap things up, is there anything you would say to your previous self that you know now that you wish you knew then or back in the day? Is there anything that maybe that you feel that you could pass on to younger entrepreneurs who are trying to get in maybe film or YouTube or social media in the way that you guys do it, or a travel channel or whatever it is that, that the humans listening in are trying to do, what would you say?
Yeah, I there are so many things that if I knew exactly what I was doing now, that I would 100% do differently. I don't have any regrets, because that means I wouldn't end up where I am now. But there are a few things, and this also ties into a little bit of what you were just talking about Nashville's entrepreneurial spirit. But if I knew exactly what I was doing now and how to get there, I didn't have, even though I grew up in a family with a lot of entrepreneurs, I didn't ask enough questions about how their business works, or lean on that when I was starting a business to call people and say, how did you organize your business? Did you use an LLC? Did you use an S Corp? You know, I was still in the drudges of Google and YouTube, and even though those are great, the best knowledge with entrepreneurs here is to call somebody who's done it before. And that's one thing that I didn't do enough here when starting a business, was digging into the business side enough. There's so much to learn about business if you've really never done business stuff before. So every day is a learning experience when you have your own LLC or S Corp or any kind of organized business. And so I wish that I could have, you know, if I would tell myself, go read business books, you know, create as hard as you can and don't let up on that. But at the same time, go read business books. The true thing that we found out with our business that we should have done earlier is delegate. Find somebody who's 80% as good or better than us and delegate. That changed the way that we did business, because it freed us up to go do incredible things beyond what we were already doing. And then in relation to that first thing where I said, you know, get on the phone and call people, the entrepreneurship community in Nashville is one thing that I think, and I've heard from so many people, is one of the best cultures that I've ever experienced. Because it is full of people who have made it. People who has no business talking to Stuart and I because of how successful they have been, but are willing to talk to us, to mentor us, to pour into us because they believe in us. And, you know, they're not asking anything in return. They genuinely value that relationship and genuinely have a heart for other entrepreneurs. And that is the music industry. That is the creative industry. That is the restaurant industry. That is the entrepreneurship industry. Now you're always going to have things that don't work out and that aren't that way. But that's more the exception than the norm. The norm is you have incredible people here with incredible heart to see other people succeed. That's one of the things that makes Nashville very special in that way for entrepreneurs. A lot of people are worried about that as the price of everything in Nashville increases, that becomes more cutthroat. We've heard time after time again, especially in the music industry, that's why people are moving to Nashville out. They're moving out of LA, they're moving out of San Francisco, they're moving out of New York, they're moving out of Chicago, they're moving out of Seattle, they're moving out of these other cities that are very cutthroat, very, very just they're more competitive, non-cooperative, and people don't really have a heart for helping people. At least that's what we've heard for like they do in Nashville. I've not been out to LA. I've been to New York just for vacation, but so I haven't really experienced the entrepreneur community, the music community, the creative community in those other areas. But, you know, when you hear it time and time again, that Nashville is very special in that way, that you got to believe it, because people are loving it down here for that reason. But I would have probably reached out to these people a lot earlier than Stuart and I have now, and continued to get this mentorship into our business and really just as entrepreneurs of how to execute things and not be afraid to call people who have been there and been extremely successful about major decisions in our business or just how to do a simple thing because they may have somebody to refer us to or things like that. So those are some of the things that I would go back and tell my younger self 10 years ago, 5 years ago, anything like that to go and do those things ASAP.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I think that you need to live your life that way. I think that we often are too scared or stubborn to ask for help. It's a lot easier to give help than it is to ask for help, I find. It's an ego thing, obviously. But and an insecurity, I've been there. I do that. I've been there, definitely. I still do it. I can be stubborn as a friggin' sack of rocks, man. You're budging, man. And it's just cool, though, when you start to realize that we're social beings and we thrive on networking and helping other individuals. That means someone helping us too. And yeah, it's that willingness to learn, right? If we're going to be a lifetime student, you know, and live to excellence in our lives as humans, we need to be able to learn from other humans too and go outside our comfort zone to be willing to learn from other humans, you know, not only the subject matter, but also those other humans and what their lot is, you know, in life. And, you know, we can compare, we can contrast. I think that leads to suffering. But I think what really the importance is to expose yourself to the world in any way that you can and gain experience from those who have done it before. Meaning I can go work for someone else. I can go do something before I start my own business. I can go ask advice. I can go study things. I can do a lot of that stuff. Like, we just launched Guerrilla Brave for food entrepreneurs out there in the world. It is a very elite group of food entrepreneurs that are in there. They live by high core values. They are high functioning. And what do I mean by that? I mean, they have discipline. They do things daily. They move their businesses inches every day, not miles, because that's a thing. And it's similar to what we're talking about here is just being able to do that, being able to keep going, being able to network with people, and then being inspired by those around you to keep moving forward. And I think that that's what Nashville provides for a lot of people. And if you're an entrepreneur that's not in Nashville, there are plenty of places you can go to ask for people to mentor you or coach you, or, hey, can I just sit around your business? And everyone wants to get paid for things that in the world we live in, everyone's like, oh, what do I get paid and whatever, or am I going to get paid for this? But the reality is you need to be able to ask for help or go help someone and be willing to not get paid for it. I know it takes economic means. You got to figure that out. But I guarantee you will learn a lot more from a non-transactional relationships from mentors and coaches. I'm just saying. And if there is a transaction like we do for or doing for Guerrilla Brave, what is that transaction and that value then that you're getting in the mentorship and the networking, and what are they doing? Okay. And I find that, okay, you know, if you want to go out and find groups and you want to go get help from people, since we're talking about this and we're on the subject matter, and you want to go find people that will mentor you, you got to look at, okay, if I'm going to spend money on this, what is it providing? Because you can't fake networking. You can't fake the individuals that make up the group. But what you can do is spend money wisely to create these groups, to create situations, to create learning lessons, or the opportunity for people to network and thus meet and grow. And so I agree with you. I think it's at the end of the day, you just need to be willing. It's not enough to just go to a group. It's not enough to just reach out to someone. You really have to call them. You have to be willing to call them multiple times and follow up. You have to be willing to learn, not just in a snapshot. And so,
it's so true. And but the thing that is also interesting, because I know you mentioned like advice for other entrepreneurs and for who may be looking to gain the experience, you're exactly right. You got to call, you got to follow up, like that entrepreneur forgot your last email and forgot your last text, because they are 24/7, and then not take it personally that, you know, because that happens to us where we may forget an email. That happens for people we email. The people that we email are so busy, and because we are actively just talking with a lot of entrepreneurs. And so, but entrepreneurs, a lot of times they're not afraid to say, if I don't answer the text, call me. If I don't answer my call, text me. You know, just you know, keep bothering me and we'll make it work. But also, you know, if you're calling somebody for their time, like if you're asking, hey, can I help? We see this a lot in the creative industry. You know, hey, do you mind if I'm just on set? I can help. I can be a helping hand, just looking to learn the industry. A lot of times it's recommended, and I've heard this from a lot of people who give advice on this, and I think it's very true. If you're looking for something like to get experience, for example, if you're looking to help on a film set, but you don't know a whole lot, you think you could be a great asset to be there and be a free helping hand. But if you don't know anything, then it's taking a lot of time out of that person's energy in that shoot or whatever to teach you how to hone that craft. So it actually expends more effort on the entrepreneur than it would be to hire somebody who already knows what they're doing. So you really have to offer, something of value. Be like, hey, I know how to do this. And so I'll help you with this if you let me just kind of come and see what you're doing on your set or see what you're doing in the kitchen or something like that. I can help you with some other tasks that I really know how to do in order just to sit there and learn for a little bit. Because a lot of times entrepreneurs, they're so busy doing exactly what they're doing that bringing somebody on new, while it can be exciting and present amazing opportunities, is essentially double the work of what you'd be doing prior to that person not being there. Now, it's usually always worth the effort because you get to teach somebody a new skill and you get to do that. But a lot of times, if you continue to do that day after day after day after day, then you're teaching a lot of people, which takes about double the energy than just you actually doing the task either by yourself or with somebody who already knows the skill.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that you're exactly right. You have to offer more. There has to be value there, because I agree with you. When you hire someone and pay someone, they're not trying to extrapolate knowledge. They don't have the entrepreneurial bug, for lack of a better term, or the seed that was planted in them. I always talk about the entrepreneurial seed being planted in us, and it's our job to grow it. You know, God plants it, we grow it. And I agree with you. And I feel the same way. And I've made that mistake before. I brought someone in to a position that wanted mentoring and helping, and I relied on them and trained them. But at the end of the day, they went off to do their own thing, which is what you want. But they tore a hole in my company, you know, because they did become so valuable, even though I was paying them. And so it's an interesting thing, you know. And then the other odd part is when you pay someone, and just so everyone knows this, is now, like, weirdly, I'm giving away this knowledge, but they don't value the knowledge anymore. They want more money. They want more money. And I'm like, wait a second, you came here to be this role. So I think it's just a delicate balance, and letting them know up front, you know, what your expectations are. And if you're coming to someone and wanting to be mentored and coached and learn from these entrepreneurs that are out there, as we're talking about with Aaron here, you just have to come prepared with what your boundaries are or what you think the boundaries should be, even if the other person doesn't have them, because you don't want to get sucked up in a situation like I just talked about. You don't want all of a sudden say to someone, oh, can I get paid more money? And you just started and you're like, hey, dude, I thought you were coming here to work, to learn, not to get paid. You know, right. So even though I think everyone should be paid fairly, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm willing to do it for free. You know, that's what if you want it bad enough, you're willing to do it for free. I'm not saying to do it for free, but I'm pretty sure that if you want something bad enough, most entrepreneurs out there start off with zero, start off at zero, start off with hardly any money in the bank account for probably years. Okay. So like, that's the thing, that's the differentiator for me now, is what's below them. Because if nothing's below them, no job's below them, and it's not about the money, even though they may get paid, that's a big deal. And I'm willing to pour a lot more knowledge and a lot more time into those individuals than I am that it almost becomes transactional, for lack of a better term. So that go ahead.
Well, and you're exactly right. And it's one of those things I didn't necessarily understand early, in being a production assistant on smaller sets when I was, you know, in college or coming out of college, you know, I didn't necessarily understand the value in going to grab coffee for people, or which, you know, Stuart and I actually don't really do. Like, we try to go as much as we can and get coffee for the people who are working for us. Like, we want to be like servant first leaders, but there is value 100%. And I understand this a little bit now of, if you're looking to just get on set or get in the restaurant or get inside of a business, it really is the best value you can bring is to find the things that the entrepreneur doesn't want to do, and then go assist them with doing it if you have the skill to do it. And so, it, like you said, even if that's for free or for very little, if you can help them run errands or run to the post office or do some of those little things or help them with their calendar, even these little things that are extremely important to entrepreneurs because they take up so much time, but the entrepreneur gets very little return for it. You're going to get an incredible look into the business just by being there willing to lend a hand versus trying to gain all the knowledge you can within a small session. That's going to be almost immensely valuable to that entrepreneur. I didn't understand that when I was younger, but I definitely understand that now.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I'm going to give an example. I just can't remember the gentleman's name, but Puff Daddy, a.k.a. Sean Combs, a.k.a. Yeah. P. Diddy. When he was in college at Howard University, he's from New York City, but when he went to Howard University, which is in Washington, D.C., he would take the train home back to New York every weekend to wash cars for a music producer, one of the best. I want to say Reed, but I can't remember his first
name.
Wow. And he did that over and over again for 4 years until he was finally able to get a job as an intern for Uptown Records in 1990 and work with like Mary J. Blige and Joe to see if anyone knows who that is. And even Heavy D and the Boys, I think was the name of the group. But he also got to experience like Mary J. Blige, Usher, Lil' Kim, TLC, Mariah Carey, Boyz II Men, SWV, and Aretha Franklin. But it took him 4 years of washing cars before he was even an intern. And he was an intern after he graduated. Like, that's the craziest part to
wow.
me, you know? And, you know, I just think that that's probably something everyone should think about. Like, if you want greatness, you got to be really, really, really willing to add value to someone to get an opportunity. And the thing about it, funny, is it creates this burning desire inside of you. It creates this monster inside of you, for lack of a better term, this caged gorilla. That's why I call the food entrepreneur group Gorilla Brave, because we almost cage ourselves. We almost, when we're really hungry and we're striving to be more, it's the journey there that makes us stronger. It's not something that we're just born with. Everyone's like, oh, you were born a hard worker. It's not true. I work hard. It was instilled in me a little bit from my parents. But mostly it's instilled in me because I have the, for lack of a better term, the bitch voice in my head. It wants me to do nothing like everyone else. I just don't listen to it anymore. As soon as I hear it, I do the opposite. It doesn't even matter what it is. It could be some ridiculous thing like mow the lawn for the third time like this week. Like, nope, you're not going to get out of it. I'm going to go do it. You know, it's not that extreme. But it just gives everyone an idea of like when my mind says not to do something or, oh, I worked hard. I don't need to do my second workout of the day for 75 hard. You know, like that's like, boom, like I'm on my feet and I'm out the door. There's times like I can barely open my eyes. I'm so tired from all the work I do and trying to grow businesses right now and diversify myself and do multiple things like the TV show for Foodtopia, the four podcasts I'm a part of, the you know, Freedom Foods, which we're relaunching to go after contract foods and co-packing business that I've got a group of individuals that we've come together to really dominate in that field. But at the end of the day, the more you can turn, we can flip the script on ourselves or use the negative voice in our head to do the opposite or say the opposite thing about ourselves, you know, in a positive way, the better off we are. And in order to do that, I think a lot of it comes from, what are we willing to do? Are we willing to be Puff Daddy and spend 4 years not attaching ourselves to the outcome? He didn't know if he'd ever get a chance, but he's like, I'm sure shit gonna try. And what I mean by not attaching himself to the income is he didn't know if he was ever going to get a chance in being in the music business. He just wanted to be in the music business. He was a humanities major, I believe. I'll have to look it up, but if I remember the story correctly. But he had nothing to do with music, but he had a yearning to do music. So he washed cars. He didn't want to teach. He didn't want to learn the classical sense of music, which you would learn in school. The music, I forget what they call it, but the basics. He wanted to go right into it. He wanted to produce. He wanted to be with the greatest artists. And the only way he could do that was by going up to New York City and washing cars. So I think that just that journey for him probably gave him the grit. And while he was a hungry dude, I think he probably got hungrier after every year of washing cars. And he would try probably harder and harder and harder to do a better job just to try to get noticed at some point. So, you know, not a great positive relationship, I guess, there, but we've got to be willing to give in order to succeed, for sure. And that is our time. So, Aaron, thank you for meeting with us today. I really appreciate it. And
yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. This is an incredible conversation, and I'm looking forward to hearing your story more. And
absolutely.
Learning more about your entrepreneurship journey, but I appreciate you taking the time to learn about mine. That means a lot. But looking forward to hearing yours as well.
Yeah, well, definitely, I'll come and record in your guys' studio when I get back down to Nashville. Maybe we'll do a podcast just with me on your show or something, or do all record from your place onto my show, and we can talk about. You guys can interview me for my story. Everyone always asks me to have someone do it. And I think you and Stuart would be really good at it. So be on my own show as my own guest would be an interesting way of doing things. Even though I have my own solo podcast like this, Centurion Leadership Italian with Justin Bizzaro, I think people are looking for my story more orated like I do with everyone else. So we'll get there eventually. So I think that's perfect for you guys. And Aaron, I'd love to have you back on the podcast. I have like 4 or 5 more questions at least for you. I'll probably have more once I listen to the episode and do the editing, but or participate in the editing, I should say. And but I would love to have you back on the show. I think what you said was just so instrumental and for entrepreneurs out there and getting an idea of what life is like and how hard you have to work and gaining a skill first and then taking the entrepreneurial journey. You know, it's very hard. I sort of learned the skill and took the entrepreneurial journey at once, and I'm not saying it's not possible. I did it. It's just interesting when you gain skill, you understand that, and then you progress it into your entrepreneurial journey. I think there's a little more strategy. There's a little more systems that come into play that help you later on. Like, you guys release shows all the time. It's pretty phenomenal, and I will share all the links in the notes for everyone. Aaron, again, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Justin. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate it too. And you guys in the audience, you can find me on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts. Again, that's Justin the Food Entrepreneurs, the Centurion Leadership Italian, and the Night Dasher with Justin Bizzaro. All of them are on there on Spotify as we're releasing them and releasing more episodes as we go into the summer. But you can also find me on Instagram at Justin Bizzaro, again, BIZZARO for anyone who's out there. And I love you guys. I appreciate you guys. Thanks for sharing the episodes and liking them and giving comments to the entrepreneurs that are on here and supporting them. It means a lot, and it means a lot to them. So thank you guys for doing that. And remember, word of mouth. Like, if you like what we're doing here and you like the entrepreneurs, just please tell someone about it. Because I think you can help other entrepreneurs out there not feel alone or not struggle or not make the same mistakes I did or maybe even Aaron did if they had a podcast like this or a show like this to reflect on, whether it's Justin the Food Entrepreneurs or the Justin Ryan Bizzaro Show, which is all the non-food entrepreneurs who I didn't want to put on my food entrepreneur show. So we finally had enough interest where we spun off a side show. And you know, I think there's a lot of knowledge here, guys. There's a lot of candy. There's a lot of nuggets. There's a lot of hidden gems, as you would say. So listen in, and I appreciate you guys. I love you guys, and we're out.